Welcome to the Decent Crypto Podcast. Today is July 11th, and we are so back. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm coming to you live from New York City. Karan, where are you coming to us from?
I am from an undoxed location deep in the heart of Spain. It's been an interesting few weeks. A lot going on in life. I'm gonna run with the bulls at some point this week.
The next bull run.
The next bull run, baby. I'm trying to make the bull run happen on my own. So welcome, all of our listeners out there. Let's see what happens. This might be the last podcast episode ever. You know, if things go wrong. Last one.
a very special Stampede episode. do not be icing liquidity for the bulls.
Yeah, that's very true. No blood from the bulls, bro. We do have a special episode though. We're giving our hot takes. This is the hot take episode, the unpopular opinions episode. Everybody's giving their hot takes right now. There's not really much going on in crypto. Like, the meta is just try and think of the next meta. So that's what we're doing right now. We're gonna come up with our most unpopular opinions, share what we think the next meta might be, and go fast and loose. Matt,
yes,
you're first, brother.
All right. My first unpopular crypto opinion is I think the blockchain will never be abstracted away. I say this because of security, right? If you think about it, like even just a few years ago, like we weren't fully sold that like proof of stake would work, right? Like the upgrade to proof of stake, it took a lot of research, and like everyone has just kind of taken it for granted over the last cycle or so that every blockchain is just secure, but it's not, right? Like you can have double spend attacks. You can have like chain halting, depending on like the consensus mechanism you're using. The security of every chain is not built the same, right? The security of Bitcoin is still the strongest. The security of Ethereum is probably next. And then you have this like long tail of assets where sometimes like the security is just like fully controlled by a trusted centralized third party. Think about like rollups, right? A lot of people tend to sort of paint this picture of the future where I have some USDC, I send it to you. Neither of us knows what chain it's on. Neither of us ever cares. And that's just like totally like ridiculous in my opinion. So if you think about like just from the asset perspective, if I'm sending you USDC and I don't know what chain it's on, then I don't know that like you're not going to like double spend it after I send it, right? Or I don't know that like I'm not double spending it, right? I don't even know that I even received it from the person who sent it to me. I have to check the chain. Like when you send a transaction today and you want to double check that it went through, you check on chain, you check Etherscan. Yeah. Like there's a reason that Etherscan is still indisposable. And if you think about like assets, like if I'm sending them across chain, like that's just not a viable, secure thing right now. Bridges are still getting wrecked all the time, right? You have wrapped assets, like all the Solit wrapped assets on FTX. And it turns out they're just fully unbacked by like the custodian, right? So I think that like we've already reached a point of abstraction, if you think about it, right? Where people today, like when they send a transaction, they don't know exactly where it's going. Right, you click sign and something's happening behind the scenes. Usually it's going to some kind of RPC, right? You're not running your own node. Like this stuff is abstracted away from you. And I think that's kind of like, if you think about like the internet, right? When I load a website, I kind of know what's happening, right? My phone or computer is talking to a server somewhere in a data center in the cloud, and I'm getting the website from there. So like, think about like when AWS goes down, right? Like people know kind of generally what that means. You don't have to be like a software engineer to know that in general, when AWS goes down, a lot of websites are going to be unreachable, right? That's a little bit like where we are in crypto today. Like none of us is assembling transactions by hand, right? None of us is manually going in and verifying signatures, right? All of this stuff is abstracted away from us. We send the transaction, we click sign in our wallet, and then it shows up on Etherscan magically like 30 seconds later, right?
Mm.
That's already an abstraction that I think is closer to the internet than most of us want to recognize, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like when you click a link in your email, you still have to check that it's not a phishing scam, right? It's the same thing like crypto. You have to check what chain you're on. You have to check that the assets actually make it through. When you send a wire, like you're supposed to call like the receiving party to like double check the wire confirmation instructions.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that like the blockchain is already abstracted away as much as it's gonna get.
Mm. Yeah, I like that take quite a bit. But I mean, so weirdly, I do agree with you, but I also disagree with you in the sense that, I mean, you kind of said this too. It's like, it kind of has been abstracted away. Like in like most cases, right? Like you don't actually have to think about the chain. Like you don't have to think about the validator set. You don't have to think about which RPC you're connecting to. And with like, with a lot of wallets too, it's like you can kind of just interact with whatever chain you want. Like this is more future state, but you can kind of see a future where, especially like EVM compatible chains, you can kind of just interact with whatever chain and the wallet will handle like, you know, which network you're actually connected to. So I agree with you, but I think the concept of like everybody has a wallet and it's like, it's not going to be like, oh, just through your bank account, you're just spending crypto on like everyday kind of transactions and you don't even know you're using crypto. I fully agree with you on that. I think everybody will know that they're using crypto rails, but they won't understand how it works, or they won't understand to the deepest level how it works unless they're listening to the Decent Crypto podcast. But for the most part, like most people will just be going about their day-to-day lives using this stuff, not thinking about what's happening at the signature level. What's, you know, it'll just be a very simple like, oh, I need $50 in my wallet right now. Just one click, send it from my bank, and then I can do whatever I need to do on chain. You don't have to think about too much past that. So I do agree with you.
Account, do you think you're going to be selecting a network?
No. Yeah. So like, I don't think you're going to be selecting a network. I think you're going to be selecting a wallet.
And the bank chooses whether it's being handled on Phantom or Harmony or Solana or Ethereum or Polygon.
Yeah, that one's a little bit tougher to figure out. But I do like, think like,
where your assets are like matters. Right. Yeah. And that's what I mean by the chain not getting abstracted away. Like a lot of people see this picture where it's like my assets are my assets. Doesn't matter what chain they're on. Everything's interoperable. Everything's abstracted away from me. I don't even have a wallet app. Right. I just have my bank app. And in the background, like USDC is being sent somewhere on somewhere. Like if I gave you the choice right now between you get $5,000 in USDC on Ethereum or you get $6,000 in USDC on Harmony and you get to claim them in 30 years, which one are you going to choose?
Oh, for sure. Like, so somebody like me, like it's, you're only ever going to use ETH really. The thing that I think is like my, like not even counterpoint, my kind of point here is like what I think the future more kind of will represent is most transactions will happen on either Ethereum, Bitcoin, Solana, maybe Polygon, but it's all just going to go to 3 to 5 chains that everybody comes to a social consensus around. And I don't think most users are going to have to think too much past that. So I think we kind of agree, but like the level of abstraction in my mind is going to be way further than, I think you're saying. Like, I just think like most people are not going to think about it. Just the way like most people don't think about like the security of their website. Like, is it using Cloudflare or like what is it using? Or like, is it run on AWS or is it run on Azure? Like, most people don't think about that. Like, they're familiar with what these terms are, but they don't really think about that unless you're specifically a web developer or you have to hire one.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
I see it.
Yeah, I think there's room for a little more abstraction, but probably not to the degree that like most futurists imagine it as, where like you're using blockchain without even knowing it.
Yeah. Okay, that leads me to my hot take. Okay, I was gonna start with another one, but this one is just so perfect. In that same vein, Solana is gonna hit $1,000. I think that's just preordained, 100%. Solana is gonna go to the moon. I think it's just got such a good story. I'd like to preface this by saying that all my Solana price predictions are wrong, like literally every single one. And somehow it's the one I made the most money off of. But I'm always way more bearish and way more bullish on Solana than everybody else. But I just think that they are building a very specific product, and they know exactly who they're building it for, and they know what kinds of applications can be best suited for that chain. It's kind of the opposite of Ethereum. Ethereum is just like, I was actually reading about the history of Ethereum too. And like even Vitalik, going back to the early days, he's just like, I don't care how people use it. I don't know how people will use it. It's just a thing I built. It's just like smart contracts. I just wanted to see the tech like work. Like, it's like a cool thing. Solana is like the exact opposite. It's like you have this kind of parallelization. You know exactly what it's going to be used for. These like, specific, like if it's like micropayments, if it's like DeFi, like all these things can run in parallel. It can have basically every single like economic unit be a transaction that's, stored on the Solana blockchain. Like they're very, very focused on building for specific use cases. They are also building an ecosystem of builders that are still there. They haven't really left. What's really driven the price down is obviously their ties to FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried and all this kind of stuff. And they're, whatever, they have this narrative somehow of being the VC chain, where like literally every other L2 or every L2 and every other L1 is also a VC chain. And Solana is actually way more decentralized than basically every other one. So the fundamentals are there. The thing that, and also like, I really like to the last point, the reason I brought this up now is like, when you think about abstraction, like I think Solana is the one that's going to go furthest in abstraction. Like Phantom Wallet is already the best wallet by far. They have a phone now. They're just building towards a future where people are actually going to use the chain. And they have a pretty solid idea of what kinds of things it'll be used for. And so fundamentally, does Solana deserve to have $1,000 per coin valuation? No, but this stuff doesn't run on fundamentals. And I think the hype is going to come back to a point where everybody's buying Solana again. And it's the, hot thing in the next cycle, and sold to 1,000, baby.
Interesting. I mean, I tend to agree that Solana has a really like differentiated approach here, right? Where they are explicitly like, forget modular, forget rollups. Like Solana is a high throughput, like purpose built, like monolithic blockchain, right?
Yeah.
And it lends itself to a lot of use cases. Like monolithic chains are great because you don't have to solve the liquidity fragmentation problem the way that you do with all layer ones or layer twos or whatever, right? All of the liquidity on Solana is available on Solana in the same way that it is on Ethereum, right? It's it just makes everything easier relative to something like Arbitrum, right? Or Optimism or Polygon, where like you have to like worry about getting your assets onto and off of the chain. Like with Ethereum, and I think we saw this during like the meme coin rally earlier this year, like it's just sort of like the de facto asset is the asset, right? Like Ether is Ether, right? On the Ethereum blockchain. On Solana, Sol is Sol on the Solana blockchain, right? And so all of the TVL, all of the activity can happen sort of at that one like canonical base layer level. And I think that's really powerful. The tech's also really good. It's way more decentralized, I think, than people give it credit for. When we did our Solana episode, there were thousands of validators, not like 100 the way that there are on any like Cosmos built chain, right? And so from a decentralization perspective, it's pretty good too. And so you have, you know, a sort of a really solid attempt at solving the trilemma of having like super high scalability while without like sacrificing on decentralization, right? And, you know, and security, right? So yeah, I'm with you. I'm very bullish on Solana. My challenge with underwriting like Solana to 1,000 is probably the same as the rest of the market, which is the overhang of the locked tokens, right? Like I don't know what's going to happen with the locked like Alameda tokens, and it's a huge percent of the supply. I think it's over 10%, right? And that's just like a huge number of tokens. And moreover, like if you're going to look at it, any of the fundamentals, Solana is just so cheap that like there isn't demand for the asset as a gas asset the way that there is on Ethereum. Like we, like you and I, and probably a lot of the listeners, we've all had times when we had to go to the centralized exchange to buy a little bit more Ether for gas, right? Because we wanted to get something done and we like accidentally ran out of Ether in our wallet. Like, you know, fees are higher than we expected them to be. That's never the case with Sol. Like the explicit goal is that like no person ever needs more than one Sol to pay for gas fees like their entire life. And so it's a little bit hard because, you know, to a degree, like, yeah, fundamentals don't drive the space. I completely agree. But they need something like sentiment and narratives need something to latch onto. So with EIP-1559, that's kind of what we saw. Like, did EIP-1559 like really change the supply demand dynamics that much that ETH ran from like 2K to like 5K or 4.5K?
Yeah.
Like, probably not, right? But it gave buyers something to latch onto. And then they saw the price, people saw the price go up and you got a FOMO in. And so I don't know if we can get there with these fundamental overhangs.
I agree. And this is the big concern I have as well, which is that it's hard to tell how much of the last crazy run up in price, because like it did go to 260, you know, like that's not that far from 1,000, like whatever, another 4X.
Yeah, that's like 4X, yeah.
The big question I have is how much of that was driven by Alameda just pumping the shit out of it. And my concern that it's good is quite a bit of it. So, who knows?
I think we'll find out again, more as we go.
Agreed. And I think there's also like, you just can't underestimate a narrative, you know, if it really catches on. Like, you know, they're doing this whole thing about, like, integrating GPT somehow is, like, nonsensical. But, like, we'll get to this later in the episode. But, like, if this AI crypto narrative pops off and, like, maybe Solana's there to capture all of that attention, like, there's no limit to how high it could go. All right, Matt, what's your next one?
All right, my next hot take is that nothing Gary Gensler does now matters, right? And, you know, the key word here is now, but also before. So nothing Gary Gensler does now matters because, bro, what do you expect him to do, right? Like, how could this not be baked in, right? Like, he's like a fucking, like, villain character in a movie. Like, of course he's going to do the evil things, right? Every move that Gary Gensler makes is just fully predictable. He is literally broadcasting for you over and over again what he's going to do. And what he wants to do and what he thinks, right? But the point of it is that like Gary Gensler doesn't make the laws, right? So the same sort of like sentiment, I see a lot of people that are like, when can we impeach Gensler, or like fire Gary Gensler, or fuck Gary Gensler, right? That's the same like visceral emotion driven response that a lot of people had toward Trump, right? Of like, Trump is single-handedly ruining this country, right? But like, that's not how it works, right? Like there are checks and balances. You could make the argument that like, okay, a president has veto power, a president can enact emergency like measures, whatever. That Gary Gensler doesn't have that, right? Like he's less powerful than that. He has the power to like bring lawsuits and that's about it, right? And go on CNBC, right? And so like Congress has the power to make laws. And then if you're going to regulate by enforcement, the actual enforcement of it happens in the courts, right? So Gary Gensler suing someone doesn't like make a law, doesn't make their business illegal, it doesn't mean anything other than the allegation of some wrongdoing, right? Where it actually happens is in the court system. And if you're gonna like stay in this country, you have to believe in the validity of our court system. So like, look, this is just like so clear as day. Like if you've read the SEC lawsuits against Binance and Coinbase, like you can see that like they're just not super professionally like composed, right? Like if you wanted to make the argument that a lot of the assets that they alleged were securities are securities, like you could probably make a pretty coherent argument for many of those assets, right? But there was all sorts of other fucking information and fluff and stuff in there. It just reflects like a very slapdash effort. And that's exactly what they needed. They needed just enough to get the lawsuit over the line so that it does enter the court system, so that Gary Gensler can pocket this as a win, so that like when you know he wants to like take a position in politics, he can do it, right? That's like just so clear to me. And he's not going to be here in 3-4 years when this stuff starts to actually get resolved. So like his incentives here are super clear, right? His actions are super clear. His strategy is super clear. It's not like he's like a chess grandmaster. Like he's playing basically according to like what you would expect someone rational to do in his position. And so like, there's no surprises there. He has no unseen power. It just is what it is. Right. I don't, he can make our lives like kind of a hassle, but it's a little bit like, you know, tragedy of the commons where like now Coinbase has to like pay for like a court fight that like, you know, they hopefully can afford. But that's about it.
So first of all, I just want to say that thank you for making us a Trump podcast now. I think the Gary Gensler thing, for a bit, it could seem dicey, but like at this point, he showed his hand, like you said. And also just some general takeaways. I don't think Coinbase is worried about this lawsuit. In fact, I know for a fact that they're overjoyed by the fact that they can actually go to court now and that a judge can arbitrate this rather than the court of whatever public opinion or, yeah, I don't know what it's else.
Fucking rhetoric,
Yeah, exactly. So I know for a fact that they're very happy about that. I don't think there is much left for Gary Gensler to do here. I mean, the fact that there's now some kind of internal investigation going on or has been put out there on like his ties with FTX, like anybody who's a rational kind of somebody looking at this space can see that the arguments they're making are not coherent, like you said. I will say, in Gensler's defense, there is cleaning up that needs to be done in this space, but what he is doing is not the way to go about it. Like there are clear frauds that need to be exposed, right? One of them is sitting at his parents' house in the Bay Area. There's clear criminals that need to be actually gone after, but I mean, the SEC has played their hand and they're not going to win these court cases. I think we can say that pretty definitively.
Yeah. And, you know, I think sort of like the key question is like, does the SEC have jurisdiction over a lot of the stuff that needs cleaning up in the space? It's unclear, right? Is it safe right now for any retail participant to participate? Like no, there's a lot more fraud in crypto than there is in a lot of other asset classes. I think Gary's hand is kind of played, and unfortunately it was played in a way that doesn't appear to like bring much in the way of consumer protection.
Not at all. Okay. My next hot take. I think the frauds are just getting started. I think the scams, the frauds, I think we are just at the tipping point of what we're going to see. My even hotter take is that this next cycle, the next bull cycle, like right now, I really think there's no narrative in crypto. Like, I think everything has just been so cooked that we're just kind of like the people that have lost all their money are, I mean, they're getting washed out. There are bag holders that have Stockholm syndrome and they're still around. They're like people like us who just like literally can't leave. And then there's just nobody else coming into the space right now. Like, I can't name a single person in my normal life who has any interest in getting back in. Even the most degenerate friends I have no interest in getting back in. They're just sports betting or whatever. The thing that will drive this stuff back is when we have the AI crypto narrative like in full force. And it's already starting. You can already see it. I mentioned the Solana ChatGPT integration, whatever. Like, I think that's just bogus, but followers of Arthur Hayes, this last article that he just wrote is all about AI and crypto. Again, I love Arthur Hayes. He's wrong many times, but I think some of the points he's making make sense. And I think that is the case that I see that's going to actually drive another bull cycle, because until then, it's like there's been nothing new that's happened in the last year and a half that will drive real adoption. Like a BlackRock ETF, like if that gets approved, fine, whatever. Like, it's a little bit of news. Like, I don't really see that much capital inflow coming through that. And I also don't really see that as a thing that's going to spark the rest of the industry. Like, if institutional capital gets in and starts buying a BlackRock ETF, that's fine, but it doesn't lead to growth in the rest of the ecosystem. So I just think that for the most part, like, there is not really much of a narrative, especially in Ethereum. Like, I'm going to save this for later, but like, ETH to me has no narrative at all. Like, I think the token price could do well because they're burning all of this fucking supply, but there is really no narrative for Ethereum. Bitcoin to me has more of a narrative. I think the digital gold kind of idea is catching on more. Institutional capital might come in. There's actually protocol level developments, you know, ordinals. So that makes me bullish on Bitcoin, but you know, Bitcoin is not where you're going to see the outsized returns. ETH to me, really nothing going on there. Solana, already talked about that. I think Solana will have a really clear narrative, but everything else is like, I just don't see it. I don't see a single thing that's interesting. Like, people are talking about real world assets. People are talking about NFT finance. Like, that's the space I'm in. There's definitely like developments there, but it's not at a point where it's picked up in the mainstream. So, the narratives are dead. AI is the thing that will bring it back. And once that happens, it's just two big like fields that are going to collide, and two fields that are so separate from each other that people are not going to understand them, and they're going to start throwing money around. And this is the thing Arthur Hayes wrote. He was like, the newest money into a emerging technology usually just gets completely burned because they overpay for growth. But if you let that dust settle and then you know, scoop up the bottom, you're in a pretty good spot. So I think that's where we are now with this AI and crypto narrative. Like, to me, the actual use cases are quite clear, but the tech is going to be so ripe and there's going to be so many scams and they're going to be massive. Like, we could see L1s that reach, I don't know, $50 billion market caps, $100 billion market caps that eventually just go to zero. Like, EOS raised $4 billion in the ICO, and that was thought to be like the biggest scam in the fucking space at the time. And I think we'll see something 10 times as big, 20 times as big.
Wow. Okay, AIX blockchain. I like it.
Yeah, bullish and bearish.
Yeah, I think, you know, forever, it's just sort of been like a cycle from like, you know, growth stocks to crypto to AI, right? And like, everybody's pivoting to AI. Like, I talked to like three people this week that have completed the pivot to AI. But those people are also people now that like spent long enough in crypto that it's kind of like sitting in the back of their minds, right? And when there are use cases, I think they'll be ready to like take advantage.
Yeah, yeah. But the fraudsters will also come.
Yeah, AI generated scam pumps. okay, so my next hot take is, I think, one that you're going to disagree with, which is that I think on-chain ID is like a very mid idea. I think it's an idealized solution to a much more complicated problem. And I think when people think about on-chain ID, they think about what could be possible if it were solved, but like they don't actually think about the implementation of it and whether or not it's even feasible. So it's a little bit like unlimited like clean energy, right? It's like if that were possible, all these other cool things follow, but like they're not, right? The thing about on-chain ID, right? I see a lot of people building, assuming that like the societal problem of trying to like square away on-chain identity and off-chain identity is solved. So I see a lot of people that are building out your on-chain passport, right? And like, it's a great metaphor, but like, who's the passport issuer, right? Like in the real world, who is actually going to issue you real world credentials for shit? So we have a product at Polygon called Polygon ID. It's really, really cool, like privacy tool. It's like selective disclosure of credentials. The problem is that like people come in and they're like, oh, you guys have Polygon ID. You must also have like a high quality, like Polygon KYC. Like, you know, who are you using for your like ID issuing? And we're like, I don't know, man. There's like three or four small players in the space, but like there's nobody in there that like people are going to trust the way that you trust a passport, right? So if you think about a passport, like what happens if you lose it? Well, you can call up your local passport office, you can get a new one issued, you're good, right? Like what happens if somebody like commits identity theft, right? Like you have insurance for it, your bank maybe pays you back, whatever. Like there's fraud mechanisms in place so that like when that happens, like it can be dealt with. In crypto, like we don't have that. And like that's a feature, not a bug. Right? Like a big part of the Bitcoin white paper is this notion of like non-reversibility, because it allows you to remove these trusted third parties that are sitting there in case a transaction needs to be reversed. And this whole concept here is that like, if you have irreversible transactions through this like immutable blockchain, you don't need those central third parties and you can reduce costs for like, for users of the network. How do we square this away with like real world ID, right? Like there's just like, you know, who makes money from this? Which government is sitting there with a profit motive to like put people's IDs on chain, right? Like forgetting like just the political climate of like government doing anything on the blockchain, right?
Yeah. So I have a couple points here. So I don't actually disagree. I think the fundamental like difference in our takes is that I just fully think like on-chain ID is like has a different meaning than like what you're talking about. So like to me, that's like basically just off-chain ID with an on-chain pointer. Like it's a real world ID just with an on-chain pointer, like putting your passport online or on-chain, I mean, or like whatever. So there is a cool concept around this. It's called RNS.ID. I don't know if you've seen this one. It's a country called Palau, I think. And they're like a small like island nation. They're basically kind of like, you know, like the Caymans and stuff, but they like issue digital IDs and they actually do put everything on chain. And you can get like an actual ID from their country. You can use it. You can actually use it to KYC with Binance. So like as a US citizen, you can get an RNS.ID. They actually have the pointer on chain and you can literally KYC with Binance. So there is stuff like that. But again, like literally it's the government issuing it. And if the government decides at any point you're a dissident citizen, they will definitely just cut that off. So yeah, I agree with that. What I think is like the difference in my take, and like we've obviously talked about this tons and tons, but what I think is like we're going to have is a much more like native on-chain ID. So something like 6529.eth, right? Like that specific wallet, everybody knows Punk 6529. Everybody can see his collection. If that wallet wanted to do anything, if they wanted to take an uncollateralized loan, if they wanted to, you know, basically do anything on chain where you had to require an element of trust, that person would basically have the highest social score, right? Because it's like, this is 6529. Like they just bought the fucking goose. Like he just put down $6 million on a piece of art. Like obviously this guy is, you know, like everybody knows him, you know? So like to me, that is the kind of on-chain ID that I think we're going to see. And I think we're going to see new kinds of applications that use that sort of thing to enable new kinds of activity that you couldn't have in like a normal context.
Okay, so let me turn it around there.
Yeah.
Let me ask you, 6529 wants to borrow cash. Will you lend 6529.eth uncollateralized?
I mean, I wouldn't because I'm broke, but I'm sure somebody would. I'm in fact, somebody would.
I mean, my challenge here is that, like, how do I know 6529 didn't get his keys stolen or won't get his keys stolen, right? Like, how do I know 6529 didn't sell his account or, like, his, you know, ENS, right? Or how do I know he's not lending it out to someone in exchange for fiat? It's like, I read a good tweet the other day about WorldCoin. It's like, the hot take is that, like, WorldCoin doesn't prevent, like, AI from acting as human, right? If you have, like, a hash that's, like, linked to someone's real-world eyeball, and then you take that hash and, or, you know, you take that private key and you use it to sign a tweet or an article or a photograph, like, attempting to, like, allege that, like, you know, you're a human who produced this content, all you've done is taken a private key that's linked to an eyeball and used it to sign a thing, right? Like, an AI can do that.
Farming eyeballs. People are already going around to little villages and scanning eyeballs and, like, collecting people's airdrops. And then they can use that for whatever, right? But the thing is, like, if you have everything natively on chain, right? Like, you can look at 6529's ongoing transaction history, and you can have some kind of constant, like, surveillance that says, like, if these transactions start to get outside of whatever, like, some kind of parameter that we're comfortable with, like, flag it. And I don't know, like, these are just on-chain systems that I think you can create around specifically only on-chain behavior. Like, the thing I totally agree with you is that the on-chain and off-chain connection will never happen because you just fundamentally need a centralized party to manage it. But I do think you can have a natively on-chain system where it's like you have these kind of you already kind of have the on-chain identity, right? Like people already tie their PFP and their wallet to like very high value stuff, right? That's in there. And it's like you can kind of have predictability around certain behaviors. Like that is all you need. Like really what you want is predictability, right? Like even in the off-chain world, if you're, you know, even if you have collateralized assets, if you have a collateralized loan, like you still need to trust that you can get that collateral back, right? You need to trust some other collection agency or some other government agency that's going to help you collect the assets from that person. It's not like you just have a gun and you take it from them. So there are elements of trust in the off-chain world too. And like, it's just up to creating that stuff in the on-chain world. And what kind of behaviors people are actually comfortable with. So if you had uncollateralized loans, right, I'm sure, like, this is, again, like, this is capitalism, right? Somebody will create an insurance product, and it'll be, like, what parameters are you comfortable with? Somebody will create, like, a social score based on everybody's, like, transaction history. If they do super degen shit, they just have a lower score. If there's somebody like 6529 who has a wallet full of, like, $30 million worth of art and they only do very low risk stuff, like you can use Arcum intelligence to unbox or to dox them, you know, like I think there's ways to do it, but I think that the constraints will be like just very different. I don't think there'll be like more constraints. There probably will be more constraints, but like they'll just also be very different, and that'll create different types of behavior. But I do think there's a potential to have some kind of on-chain like identifier that is useful.
Interesting. Yeah, I think there's a potential for a step forward, a step closer in that direction. I think like jumping into like the edge case of like, I can take a fully uncollateralized loan based on my on-chain activity, like is where like the danger starts in. But like, you'll start slowly.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I think it will start super slowly. All right. Let's get into my next hot take. I'm kind of merging all my hot takes. So I'll really just focus on this last one. So if you look at the high level, right? Like we're talking about where we are in the cycle, what's coming next, what will drive another bull market, what's the next meta? And like, just the more I look at it, basically everything in crypto is useless. Like that's my overarching takeaway. Like almost everything is useless. Like even if you look at the things that, especially Ethereum, like if you look at the things that are popping off on Ethereum, it's like Pepe and Bored Apes. Like literally like the history of Ethereum is like Pepe and Bored Apes. Like those are the things that have popped off the hardest. The things that are useful are Uniswap and Aave and Compound, but they're like fractions of the value of these other like scams. Shiba is actually the number one application, I think, on Ethereum. And obviously I think the stable coins are the most useful, but stable coins, again, for most people will never be like settled on Ethereum. It's just too expensive. So that aside, I think that crypto is fundamentally not useful for most people right now. But I do think that crypto is fundamentally useful when we live in a world of AIs. And so I think that crypto so far has had zero consumer applications that have reached more than like maybe 100,000, a couple hundred thousand people. If you look at ChatGPT, it has 100 million users within 6 months. So like crypto has just not crossed into the mainstream in that sense. But I do think once we live in the world of AIs, it will be literally everywhere, inescapable. Every microtransaction will happen on chain. It just has to, because you need to like fundamentally, and this is, I'm borrowing from Arthur Hayes again, all these AIs, they need data and they need compute and they need to pay for that. And so they're going to have to use crypto rails. And so I think we see real consumer applications in crypto once AI takes off. Like I don't think there's another use case aside from stable coins. That, and like NFT is like, sure, whatever, like maybe it happens, but I think NFTs are also really cooked. I think the thing that makes, like, there's a couple things, right? It's like NFTs can pop off in this world of like, they're like part of like rewards programs and all these like small things that like Starbucks and whatever. That's one potential avenue. Not too high on that. Stable coins are another potential avenue, just so much regulatory uncertainty. And like, that is definitely going to happen, but like the shape is a little uncertain. But machines, like fundamentally clear use case going to happen. There's no other solution really. Like the machines is like really just cannot use any other form of currency outside of crypto. And so that, like, AI and crypto to me is like the only thing that is interesting. And again, like, I know I'm just throwing buzzwords out and like nobody wants to hear this shit, but like it is an actual problem that really does need to be solved, and whoever solves it is going to make stupid amounts of money. But there will also be a ton of scams and whatever, fraudsters along the way. But that is the only real thing that I think can gain consumer adoption in crypto.
Yeah, I mean, conceptually, this idea of like a machine native money makes a lot of sense. But I think if you look at the way that AI success has been driven so far, it involves like a huge amount of upfront capital, right? So like, yeah. ChatGPT costs like $1 million a day to run or something, mm-hmm. right? Just for like inference, right? For training, I think the estimates are like $1 billion or so worth of like AWS credits or Azure credits, right?
Yeah.
where I think it gets kind of interesting is like if you have a large AI and it gets asked a question that it needs like niche, like domain expertise in, like mm-hmm. it could spin up its own model, right? Using like a cryptocurrency to like pay for it. And so it can sort of like outsource that work to like more highly specialized like domain models. I think that's pretty interesting. But and yeah, overall, like, pay,
yeah, and it can also pay like data providers, right, to train them all.
Yeah. I mean, this is sort of the thing. There's like Ocean Protocol, but I think that like it's a little bit cart before the horse, right? Of like the most valuable data set is all of the data on the internet, right? And like there's no like crypto available way to like train there right now. But I think more and more, like, you'll get, like, the Twitter limits on scraping or whatever, and you're like, huh, yeah. Okay, more and more companies are going to realize that, like, the data that's available on the internet is like, a valuable resource for them, and they need to figure out a way to, like, keep or monetize it. And cryptocurrency is, like, one really good way that a machine can pay another machine, right? And you're going to have, like, fully autonomous, like, actors.
Yeah, exactly. Like, the reason ChatGPT right now is so powerful is because it has the history of the human existence at its, you know, at its disposal, and it can literally, it can use the greatest minds ever for free, like it, not for free, but like for like at no cost, or like it doesn't have to pay the actual creator anything, right? It has to pay for the data to like scrape the data somehow. But it doesn't have to pay the original creator anything, right? So like people who have written great novels or people who have written great pieces for the New York Times, they're like ChatGPT is using their work for free and they're not getting anything from it. Eventually that's going to change. And it's kind of sad because it'll make the internet a closed place. But at the same time, if you have the ability for machines to access that data through microtransactions, micropayments, you could have different kinds of use cases. And like, I do think that's going to happen.
Hmm. Yeah. It's a good take. I wonder how long it'll take to play out.
I think the actual thing, like a real consumer application or like a real, like actual like solution, my over under is like 5 years. So not this cycle, next cycle. But I think we see some massive, massive valuations in this space within the next 2 years.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. Okay. I have a hot one. You ready?
All right.
Okay. The modular blockchain thesis is a VC gatekeeping scam.
Oh baby. Okay, so real quick, can you break down the modular blockchain thesis in 30 seconds for us?
So this is exactly the reason I think it's a fucking gatekeeping scam, is like there's nothing that people talk so much about in crypto without like and so few people like really have a good idea of what it actually means. Because it doesn't mean anything. It's a scam. Basically the way that a modular like proponent would explain it is you have Ethereum, right? And it has all these different components that are sort of like wrapped together in a monolithic structure. So you have execution, you have data availability, you have security and consensus, and they're all part of like the same system here, which is Ethereum. In the modular blockchain thesis, you can have different products that serve these purposes, right? So like security, you could have like EigenLayer, check out our deep dive on that. Consensus, you could have whatever protocol you want. You know, for data availability, you could have something like Celestia. For execution, you could have different virtual machines, not just the EVM. And my hot take here is that like this is very convenient if you are a VC, right? Because now instead of having one product that has all four things, you can invest in each of them separately. Right. And if you're a founder, you no longer have to like weave the things together. You can just build one thing. The challenge here is like monetization, right? So if you're building a VM, like your path toward monetization is extremely unclear. Like, because you don't have a token, or like your token doesn't like, it doesn't provide security for a chain. It's not a gas token. It's not a staking token. What is it? Is it a governance token over like the virtual machine architecture? Like that's absurd, right? The token itself is a meme, right? And I think like people started to figure out that like tokens could just be memes. And then everyone was like, well, I'll just raise a bunch of money for all this other stuff. I think like if your idea is good enough, like if you have genuinely a novel enough approach to this, then you should be able to, based off of that, have it as part of like one coherent system, right? And so like Solana is the counterexample here. Solana has a different VM, right? They have a different or a slightly different consensus mechanism, but it's basically the same as any proof of stake blockchain, right? They have like little pieces of tooling to make the cross machine communication more efficient, like proof of history, but that's not the consensus mechanism, right? So they have a different VM, right? But they have basically the same data availability approach as Ethereum. They have basically the same like security mechanism. And all they've sort of changed is like the VM to support like parallelized transactions. That is a good enough, novel enough thing that when combined with like the other innovations that they made in like on the tech, like it supports a whole like standalone blockchain, right? But let's give the counterpoint here. Celestia, what the fuck is Celestia? It's a kind of blockchain that kind of publishes blocks, but it doesn't have any of the like virtual machines attached to it, right? So Celestia is just for like the publishing of data in like a consensusized way, right? But that might as well just be data on Bitcoin blocks, right? Yeah. And then you like get the security of like Bitcoin itself, right? Like if Celestia is trying to be a like, where is Celestia going to accrue value? It's going to have a staking token to make the consensus work. And so at that point, you have a proof of stake blockchain that just doesn't have a virtual machine. Like that doesn't make any sense as a product, right? But this was very convenient for VCs because retail doesn't quite understand what modular blockchain is and isn't. And so as a result, everyone's going to be like, wow, look at all the smart people that invested in Celestia. Look at all the hype and buzz they're getting. And the tokens will pump, right? But it's gatekeepy, right? Like nobody actually goes in and breaks down and explains like what the fuck does this mean? And I think it's very telling that some of the smartest minds in the space are working on monolithic blockchains, right? Because like modularity just like doesn't scream like value add. That's my take on the modular blockchain thesis.
So you agree with me, Ethereum is fucked.
Look, I mean, I think like the narrative for Ethereum will be L2s, but what I think it should actually be is the recognition of it as Manhattan, right? Ethereum is where all of capital is, and it, I think, just by nature of it being like the second largest asset after Bitcoin, right, it retains that liquidity. So like if you want to launch an NFT collection that will go to the moon, it has to be on Ethereum. Right. If you want to launch a meme coin that has a chance of going to the moon, it also has to be on Ethereum. I think individual users are going to be interacting with Ethereum for years and years to come. I don't think it's going to be all L2s, but I think the Ethereum narrative is going to be the L2 narrative, and I'm not that excited about it. So I agree. Like generally, I'm kind of on board with like Ethereum lacking in like a high quality narrative. I don't think it needs one. Is the difference?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I also agree. This is why I'm still bullish on the token price. I'm just not bullish on the network. You know, whatever. Lindy, I guess. I don't know. All right, Matt. Any final takes? Any final pieces of spice you want to deliver?
No, I mean, I think, I think this is like really fun, right? Because the most interesting conversations I have in the space are the ones where people disagree. And the ones that I have where everybody agrees with everybody else is the worst, right? So like when you go to a conference and you're having a conversation with someone and they're trying to paint out an argument that you've heard a million times that like, you know, say somebody's trying to convince you that proof of stake is green, right? Like, okay, cool. Like, yeah, it's probably greener than Bitcoin. Like, the counter take, like the hot take of like proof of work is good for the environment, that's like the more fun conversation to have. And so I just like want to encourage everyone to like think for yourselves, like ask yourselves like what is it out there that I have as my unpopular, and like how can I step in and defend it? Because you know it's really easy to settle into like groupthink when you have Twitter and like the algo pointing you toward thought leaders and all that. And that's no fun for anyone.
Yeah, it's true. More critical thinking is very much necessary in this space. I cannot agree with you more. That's I think that's a standard take, not even a hot take. All right, Matt, this is definitely fun. Maybe this is just a podcast from now on. Hot takes every week, unpopular opinions. just shit on new chains, shit on projects. This is the most fun podcast, honestly. All right, cool. Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back in a few days, hopefully, maybe. Yeah, have a great weekend, everybody. Exactly. I need to survive tomorrow first. It's going to be an all-nighter. Yeah, we'll be back, everybody. Till then, stay decent.
None of this was financial advice, legal advice, investment advice, or any other kind of advice. If you're looking for advice, you are definitely in the wrong place. Until next time, stay decent.